Have you ever eavesdropped on a conversation and you felt badly? Well, now you don't have to. The Talent, Sales, and Scale podcast is pleased to introduce Hypergrowth Banter, a time that you are invited in to eavesdrop on a couple of subject matter experts on all topics related to revenue generation. So join us, won't you, for the Hypergrowth Banter Show brought to you by the Talent, Sales, and Scale podcast. Should be a lot of fun. Okay, I have 45 minutes, I think, or 35 minutes. Well, I have the next one. But the goal of this, and I don't know how much, if any, work that you did prior to this, but what I did is I did a whole entire mind map of all the different things that went into messaging. So no wonder whenever I was on at Live or Five by Friday, why I was so screwed up, because I thought it was just about the words and a couple of tactics. And whenever I was doing this, I'm like, holy crap, there's a ton of stuff here. So that's kind of the idea behind this. So this, we call it the hypergrowth banter on specific topics. So really the goal here is to go over this idea of what all do we need for cold outreach messaging? What's the recipe? And then from that recipe, we can go into tactics later, but today is really, let's look at all the recipes, and if tactics come out of it, great. And then this is the idea behind this is, this is kind of like a open source IP, right? So everything that we come up on here, if you can use it as tools and assessments or worksheets to help your group, absolutely do that. So that's kind of the idea here, if everyone's good with that. All right. So let's jump into this. So I can go first or I can go last. Whenever I looked at cold outreach messaging, give me kind of the first sense. What comes to your mind? Do you want me to go first just to kind of get an idea of this? Or Patrick, do you want to go first, or Francois?
I'll go first.
All right. I love it.
Just like a general rule of thumb is keep your message so short that it seems like comically short. Like if you looked at it normally with your old like cold outreach glasses on, you would think it's ridiculous. Like I'm thinking like 1 to 3 sentences.
Okay.
And I find this to be helping my team radically, because I just recently transitioned about a year ago into a leadership role, and every single message I get is a paragraph. And the second I see a paragraph from someone I don't know, without even reading the first word, I delete it, because my brain identifies that as a sales message and I'm just done.
Okay.
So you have to break that pattern of long messages, because people won't even give you a chance.
Got it. So less is more, and you're talking 2 to 3 sentences.
Sometimes one.
Okay. So 1 to 3 sentences. So let's unpack that a little bit. So with that 1 to 3 sentences, my sense is that is going to require a lot of planning, a lot of drilling down, because the shorter the message, the more that you have to understand that. So can you unpack that a little bit? What are maybe some ways that you can help us to be able to home in on that message a little bit more?
There's a lot of talk about personalization. I think Justin Michaels brought up the word relevancy a lot, where I try to just focus on my messaging being super relevant. I'm not a mind reader, so I can't 100% predict how relevant it will be, but there are some indicators, like the person's title, the kind of industry they're in, what's been going on in that industry lately, things that are happening at the business, such as hiring, things of that nature, that you can be super relevant with. So just like the most very standard version of the messaging could be like other companies that are like you, and then use whatever keyword that might be, like other software companies are using a lesser known method to increase their close rates and figure out some of the forecasting issues that are causing budget issues. Open to a quick chat.
Okay.
That's my whole message.
Okay. So you're using that curiosity statement, that lesser known approach or lesser known method. So short message, drive the curiosity statement.
Yeah. Keep it super relevant. So even though it's a scalable method, it could only go to someone like them.
Right. Okay. Let me pause you there. I'll do a tie-in, but let me go to Francois next. So Francois, PD, tell me out it again. What is it again?
There's so many names, right?
So many names, right?
You can call me Patty Daddy. You can call me P Daddy.
P
Patty D.
That's it. Patty D. All right. So Patty D gave us less is more, 1 to 3 sentences. I'll break that out as to kind of what I had of the research to get there, and we can see how much that aligns. But what do you have, Francois?
Get to the point of how you can help your customer very, very quickly and save that hyper-personalizing on the personal side, i.e., you know, maybe what they you've seen them talk about more personally. Save that till later. You know, use that as maybe rapport building in some other calls. I don't think you have the time or the luxury. I think you've got that first shot to really prove, look, I can help you. And you've got to do your research. I don't want to oversimplify that. But I think the brevity, like Patrick was talking about, is super important because people, they just don't have time. And you're a complete stranger. If you've got a paragraph and you're not getting to the point, you're done.
Yeah. Okay. So let's hit this. So I took the cold outreach message. I broke it into 4 areas. Research, which is, I think, what Patrick and Francois, what you just really talked about. We can't do that brevity. We can't do that relevance without the research. The second thing is then design. Really design this thing out. Is there going to be, you know, based upon your prospecting belief, there's going to be a specific go-to-market strategy that you take. So I'm guessing that Patrick's go-to-market strategy is going to be different than Francois's just based on your personalities, right? Patrick, my sense is you and your team are going to be absolutely comfortable with a outbound. We're going to go after it aggressively, not assertively, not aggressively, right? Not that like over the top in your face, but professionally, but we're going to have no qualms in going outbound. With Francois, I'd think that you would take a little bit more relational approach, more of an inbound approach. Is that a fair summary on those two?
Yeah, I think so. If you're talking about like in our day-to-day roles right now, that's a totally fair summation.
Yeah. And I think that go ahead, Patrick.
Well, our team is split up in two. We have an inbound team and an outbound team. So we take both approaches.
Okay. And I call that 100%. And I call that the unbound approach. And I think that's the right approach, right? Because if you go inbound, outbound, in that combination thereof, because one thing that we haven't talked about today is once you get these inbound or outbound leads, that first generation, if only 1-2% of those MQLs are converting to a sale, what happens to the other 98, 99% of those? And those have to go into a nurture campaign, which is a completely other messaging session. So today we're just really talking about that cold outreach messaging. So we have research, design, then the building of this, and then innovation of it. So I put off those 4 key areas and then from there branched off. So, I mean, is that kind of oversimplifying it? Is that overly... complicating it? I mean, taking it out to research, design, build, and innovate. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to jump in, Patrick. I was listening, Brian, to the podcast that you and Jordana had, and where you were talking about kind of running towards the objection. And so I think, you know, you can also try and jump the shark and throw a line in here. So let's say Patrick's my prospect, and I know that this tool I have or solution can help him shorten a sales cycle. But I know the typical objection is X or Y. I can throw in a quick line saying, look, you know, you're probably concerned about X, and a little teaser in there that lets them know, look, I know this is going to be your first objection. It could be price, it could be something else, but that maybe, well, that might flip him to kind of going, okay, fine. He knows I'm going to be, you know, skeptical, but he's got my interest. So I don't know. That's something I think that could work as well.
Patrick, you had a comment.
So when you said build and design, how are you seeing those as different?
Yeah, so I say, so the way that I have design is I have design your go-to-market strategy. And of that go-to-market strategy, you know, what's that team going to look like based upon that go-to-market strategy, and design your processes, inbound, outbound, unbound. And then that's going to design the technology and the operations and the sales and marketing team, headcount, everything that we need for that. So that's all the design phase. And then once designed, then it goes to build. I have to now build that thing out, hire the people, integrate the technology, and it really goes back to build that team to be able to have the ops, the marketing, and the sales prowess to be able to do that, depending on our technology stack, and then build out the pursuit campaign. So if I have an inbound design, So that's going to be the design of the steps. Well, then I have to build it out for the messaging that goes along with it and the words that I'm going to use, and take those words, build that out over the appropriate channels. So that's how I'm seeing the difference between design and build. Was I okay in clarity on that?
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people skip that step of like defining go-to-market, especially early on. And they're just like, oh, well, we need customers and we need to hit this growth rate. So we're just going to start like throwing stuff into sequences and going after people we think might be kind of our ICP. But I've learned lately that ICP, I think, is a lot more of a tighter thing than most people treat it.
I'm glad that you brought that up. So let me go crazy on this. So you should, I'll share this with you here. You guys will laugh, absolutely laugh. And Jordana, absolutely feel free to jump in here, because Amy Quick, who I've not yet met before, I think she's a figment of the imagination, because whenever the last time I was on with you, she wasn't showing up. So where's Amy, I see, is always the tagline there. So Jordana, if you want to play the part of Amy Quick, jump on in here. But let me share the screen with you, and you can see the craziness, which is my which was my mind map here. So if we look at this messaging session off of research, I think there's going to be the messaging session, which gives you that ICP, right? Because what you pointed out is there's an absolute ideal customer profile. But whenever I was thinking through this, Patrick, to your point, is that ICP dependent upon not only job description or job function? Let me call it job function as opposed to job description, and title, because most people, I think, just look at title as opposed to job function, or most people look at title as opposed to management level. But doesn't that really depend upon company size? Because a business function, or a job function or a title at a Fortune 500, if I'm a director in a Fortune 500, I have a lot more ability than I would as a director level in an SMB company. So I have to know that ICP per company size, which gives me then the persona, and then that allows me to understand their why, to write that 1-3 line pithy message to get their attention. So that was kind of the craziness going through my mind. But again, I can overly complicate it, but that's what I was thinking. To do this right, you kind of need to do this, but your feedback.
That's what relevance is, right? Like, this is specifically relevant for somebody that's in a 500, 1,000 size company that is at VP level. I think a lot of people stop at persona as just like, oh, you're sales leader, but a director of sales and a VP of sales have very different concerns. So you need to make sure that you're also appealing to that, plus where they are in the industry. Something like Cheetah IQ is helpful in knowing what's going on with their board. Because like, depending on what's going on with the funding that they're getting, how they're doing raising money, things change a lot with that too. But a lot of people stop at just, oh, you're a sales leader, and then design their messaging around that. But it needs to be much more specific.
Okay. So you don't think I'm completely crazy on this. Francois, Jordana, thoughts, feedback on that?
Well, you know, back to Patrick's piece about kind of a lot of people skipping that segmentation. I think that's abundantly clear with the automated messaging I'm sure we've all received. And it's a very, let's just call it lazy spray and pray approach, right? So you can tell there's been very little thought into this, right? They see the title and then they rapid fire hundreds, if not thousands, of these messages. But I think what's really interesting is I don't disagree with, you know, getting really segmented. So, you know, what's your total addressable market? What's your ICP? Then, you know, into verticals, and then maybe titles in those verticals. But I think often some people don't spend enough time going, which ones do we cross out? Which ones should we not bother going into? Which ones do we know we crash and burn in? I'd rather spend some time knowing where not to focus, because that's a wasted effort in the end.
100%. 100%. I like that idea. So I have over here I have market feedback, which kind of goes into that. So that seems to, like, that might want to go up into that ICP for that market feedback. But then the other piece of that too is, I was reading a book recently, and I want to get more deeply into this. There's a book by April Dunford, is I believe her last name, a Canadian, Francois, and she wrote the book called Obviously Awesome. And it gets around positioning. And one of the key ideas that I took from her was this idea of alternatives. What alternatives are they using today in lieu of you, especially if you have a cutting edge product or service? What are they doing in lieu of you, right? Are they just staying with status quo? I can't do anything about it, so life sucks, but so what? I just got to deal with it. Or are they moving to a competition? Or are they using the low-cost approach like an intern or, you know, somebody off the street? So what are those alternatives? And then off of those alternatives, what are the problems that we solve that will address those alternatives and do it better? And that's going to give us our positioning. In order to know that, though, we really need to understand the impact upon not only the business, but the person in terms of time, money, and reputation, especially for that person. So going to that why, that would, I guess, then tie back to this why of the company size to the personas to the why to your one to three sentence pithy statement to grab their attention is what I'm thinking.
Well, and I'll also say, and you know, it might be going off a little bit, but I would also say and challenge that, you know, if it depends at what level the reps are maybe helping out building some of these sequences or the messaging. But if you're not sure if, you know, how you're solving this person's problem, then you need to probably go back to the drawing board a little bit, because, you know, if you can get them into that first meeting, great. But if you're not really sure how you can help them, you need to know that. And I'd also say, if you're not sure where you're not a fit, it's probably because you don't know your product that well. And so I'm not trying to shame that junior SDR, but that person above them should be enlightening them and saying, hey, listen, Brian, like we don't fit into this space. We're not going into that, you know, don't bother with people in this vertical.
Yeah. And I don't think it's a shaming of the SDR. I think it should be really the shaming of the onboarding practices. Right, we're not training our people well enough. Here's the phone. Here's your list. You now have your auto dialer. You now have your sequencer. Go get them, killer.
Yeah.
Right, and they don't know how to have executive conversations yet. We're asking them to call C suites and upper level VPs, and we haven't equipped them to do so.
Yeah, agreed.
So, thoughts on that, Patrick? I mean, you're really good at narrowing things down. I wish I had your superpower of narrowing things down. So. I mean, coming to this specificity, how do we then take all of this, which you're doing, my guess is you're doing all of this in your head and not even realizing it. But then how do you take all of this stuff that you're doing and home it in like you are with that short, succinct messaging?
You probably need to
be using some sort of,
my bad. Should be good now. Sorry about that. We probably need to be using some sort of chart. I haven't built this yet, but I like Venn diagrams or like overlapping Venn charts where I could say like this piece of messaging is relevant to this, but not this, that kind of thing, and sort of get some sort of overlap between the different kinds of messaging and saying, okay, if I even have a spreadsheet that has a column that's all like title and then another row that's all industry, and then finding what messaging lines up at each of those intersections. Until you know what that is, you could make some sort of spreadsheet like that and literally just plug and play, create a template that has an area that's like copy paste from spreadsheet and just take it from the sheet and put it into the message.
All right, so let's figure that out, because here's to that end, I put down here even outreach templates. Right. Yeah. So it seems like what you're talking about is a messaging template to create an outreach template. And I was kind of curious in an outreach template. And it seems like, Francois, are you more email than telephone?
Yeah. I mean, although in my industry, we're predominantly inbound, you know, I think, you know, you still have to think about, okay, that first outreach or, you know, follow-up outreaches, you still got to be sharp in your messaging. You know, they can lose interest and you still got to somehow stay at the top of their inbox. But I would say in other engagements where I've been doing some outbound, I've tried to figure out what that template is and then use elements of it where it could be by industry or by title. Because I think once you find something that's resonating, i.e. open rates or response rates, you may as well reuse that.
Right. Well, and so I'm really curious for you and Jordana, for you to jump in here too, if you'd like, but off of this, so I put it down to a four-step template, and I think that this should align with both calls and emails. And then in doing this exercise this morning, I realized it's really three, because the four that I had before was building trust and then having a pattern interrupt, right? So that way of building trust. So I look at that pattern interrupt as being a way to build that trust. So we build trust, lay out the curiosity statement, and then a call to action. So that's really the three steps that I have. And to break down what the building trust process was, I had communicate like them, right? So depending on the personality style, the DISC profile, whatever the case may be, we communicate like them, identify who you are. So they put some context to it, what you fix that's going to be important to them, so it's relevant for them, and then help them to realize, is it worth it to them? Because there's going to be time and effort and money and resources, political capital. So what can I succinctly say that's going to allow them to realize, hey, is this worth it to me to fix this problem? Do I trust you well enough to allow you an additional 2 to 3 seconds at a time? So that's kind of how I saw this. So let me get some feedback on that process.
You want to go first, Patrick? Do you want me to take a stab at that?
You take it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I like how you broke that down, and the piece that jumped out at me near the end there, Brian, and I'm trying to think how you could do this very succinctly, is convincing them that the pain of status quo is worse than the pain of the change you're potentially going to be introducing. That sounds really, I don't want to say easy, but how do you get that into a sharp message? I think that's the puzzle. But I think all these pieces here, you've got to show some credibility. You've got to show that you know something about their specific pain, building some rapport or trust right out of the gate. And that, is it worth it? Again, today, it's painful, but, how can you prove to them getting them over here is not going to be more painful? That's a tricky one.
It's always more painful. Is the truth.
But
that's something that you have to admit to people when you're trying to get someone to change, that it is difficult to change. I think convincing someone to change a process or something about their life is probably one of the hardest things you'll ever do. And you need to kind of buy into the idea that that's true. Because I find a lot of people try to fight that. Oh, we're the easiest thing in the world. We're plug and play, blah, blah. And that's how you get the CSMs wanting to kill you. By saying stuff like that, change is hard.
Well, yeah. So, sorry, Brian.
You first, please.
One thing we've talked about internally sometimes is trying to understand the different personality types. So someone may not be willing to stick their neck out to see this change. So they may be a sponsor, but they're not really going to help you maybe get it across the line. But there are people, I think they're called builders sometimes or growers, where you can see in their career they've gone into companies and they've been part of these changes and they're part of their brand or their legacy. And so when you can identify those people, you can say, you know what, I know this is a change that probably should happen here, but I need somebody who's going to be that internal champion or hero. And that messaging needs to get to them.
Yeah, so you tell me if I'm being too wimpy here or too overly simplistic, or I'm starting to come to the conclusion that if they don't have a pain, an immediate pain that needs to be fixed, or if they are not a growth-minded or growth mindset, always looking for that innovator. So if you think about crossing the chasm language, that innovator, right, that early adopter, if they're none of those two, then they're going to be in status quo. And no matter what I do or say, I'm not going to get them to change. So I've come to that belief, and I'm hoping that you can talk me out of it, because I'd love to say that's not true, but I think I'm coming to realize that that might be true.
No decision is definitely your enemy in a lot of accounts.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll lose to no one, but no decision, which is awful. But I think that's a great point. And can you identify that earlier based on traits similar that you've seen in other accounts? But I think, if they have pain, but they're not interested or nobody there is willing to kind of go through it, I think the other thing is, if you can identify a pain that they aren't even aware of, but you still don't think, they're willing to change, I'd say just cut your losses.
Yeah, and I think, and I just drew a line here to nurture. So that's where it goes to that then nurturing message until they are ready, right? Because everything changes every single quarter so massively. So maybe we can get them onto that point. Thoughts on that, Patrick? I mean, am I being a wimp on this?
No, I actively choose no decision every day. It's the easiest thing to do, right? Like I can just lay in bed instead of doing anything. And people say that it's like crack when you cancel plans, right? It's immediately like, oh yes, like I'm so relieved because there's so much stress that gets put on your brain when you have to actively think strategically, which is what we're asking people to do. Because like to you, it's a set of pains and value points, but to them, it's like a working machine that they've been in for potentially a decade that has these different parts that act a very certain way. And you're asking them to change one of those many thousands of parts, which could potentially break everything. So then there's also the idea of like, oh, you could mess up my business potentially. And if I make this choice, that's my fault. And I find that a lot of sellers don't empathize with that and understand that and help them through it. Because the first step to helping someone through that pain is to understand that it's a real legitimate concern.
So really what you said here then is not only do we need that curiosity statement, but a statement of how we reduce risk.
Yeah,
Interesting.
how do you
Okay.
actually do it? But you can't be like this magic band-aid that says there's no risk at all. We have all these onboarding implementation procedures. It's like, no, there's always a risk. And I find when you try to say that there is no risk, that's more sketchy than admitting that there is.
It's like the person that comes up to you and says, "Oh, you can trust me. I'm so honest." Right.
But how often do salespeople say, oh, you're going to love this. This is going to work perfectly for you. To me, when I hear that from a salesperson, like it's like an alarm going off that I should not trust this person and that they don't have my best interest at heart and they're not really listening to me.
That's a really sound point. That is extremely sound point. And it's not a matter of you not being positive. It's right looking out from
It's
their
unrealistic.
perspective. Yeah, right. I
How
love
do you
that.
know it's going to be a perfect fit for me? There's no way you could possibly know that. I hate when people say, oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
How do
So
you know?
now let's give some real good tactics here for the people that are listening to this. What's a line that you might use in lieu of that?
I'm going to say, hey, John, I've never talked to you before, and I'm not 100% sure if this would work for you, but other people that have told me that they're struggling with similar problems around the proposal process and around how it integrates with the CRM have told me that by integrating them, it saves them a lot of time. Do you think it would be ridiculous for us to explore how we can help in that way?
So I've seen it bantered about in the LinkedIn land as, they're calling that a humility statement or okay, not okay. I'm going to intentionally go not okay. So that softening statement or however you want to bridge it is so critically important, which goes back to that point of building trust. So the awesome stuff there. I love it. And then how are you, do you think through these parts like the building it up, I think that we hit that, the building up of the value content to create. How important is what you're doing over with your team, Patrick, and Francois? I think that you do this quite a lot, is building up that valuable content to go along with that pursuit campaign. So if I can't reach you, at least if I'm going to touch you with an email or whatever the case may be, I'm going to bring a value piece of content to get their mind working a little bit. Are you, is that a right way to do it, or what's your thought on that?
I would say that that then means we're probably putting them in a nurture sequence. And the good thing now is like people used to use content libraries, which still have a place. But if you're using a sequencer, you can build out modified sequences for different content depending on who you're talking to. So I have a 500 plus sales director nurture cadence that I could put someone in if they're not responding to me that has the exact content they need, whether that
Okay.
be like a case study or a video or something of that nature. You could just pop them in that. And it automates that whole process and makes it relevant.
Got it. And then the last piece that I had here is we're winding down time, and you tell me if this is off, but that ongoing innovation. So, Patrick, it seems like you do this pretty well, and Francois, you absolutely are doing this with inbound and AB, I'm guessing. Is that innovate, getting a bit of palatability so all people are more or less using the same process or same methodology, they're bringing in their own authenticity to it, but A/B testing it. So we need good data and then good market feedback. Is that the last segment to really getting good messaging then?
Market feedback.
Well, market feedback, but also that A/B testing and data.
I went to Surf and Sales last year, right before everything hit. And one of the things that really stuck to me was Scott Lee said, if a real scientist came in and saw the way that we like process data and conducted experiments, we would be like laughed off the face of the planet, because you can't just take two statements in a vacuum and like put them against a bunch of different random people and expect the difference in percentage to actually mean anything. Unfortunately, A/B testing is, from my perspective, caused more problems in a lot of ways, unless it's really controlled. Like, this cadence is only going to people named John in Texas that are specifically a VP of sales, and that's the only title in the software field. It has to be like incredibly specific. Otherwise, you're going to have a bunch of random stuff influencing that without some sort of control.
Interesting. I would not have expected you to say that. Francois, you seem like you were as shocked as I was.
I know, I think it's interesting, right? Because I think A/B testing gets thrown out a lot, but I think that's a really interesting point that Patrick points out there, right? Is like, are we putting all these different personas and types into all of these buckets and doing like proper comparison? Because I think if we're not, then it probably does more harm than good. And I'll just add one thing prior to what Patrick's statement was around, the alarm bells going off when people come in and they're like, this will be perfect. I've been trying to change my tone in the last 6 months to a year. And I feel fortunate because I've been in a specific industry and have a lot of experience in it, but it's a bit more, I don't want to say cynical, but we all know trusted advisor gets thrown out a lot. But if Patrick is a friend, I'm not, when he's asked me for feedback something, I'm not always going to be telling him it's sunshine and roses. I'm going to be giving him kind of the underbelly, if you will, the dark side of the story. And I find like when I'm
Show
talking
me
to
the
some
belly.
when I'm talking to some prospects, we talk about getting over here, but there's this like massive white space in the middle that they don't really understand. And so I'm often telling them about like, hey man, like it's going to take 3 to 6 months to go through this. These are all the ups and downs. Like, I don't know if are you or your team ready for this? And I think they appreciate that candor. And unfortunately, if you haven't had experience in the industry, sometimes you can't speak to it. You're just telling them, hey, over here it's going to be amazing. And they're like, no, it's not. Like, be honest with me, man. Like, that's going to be a painful road. I think if you tell them it's going to be a painful road and how you've been down it and why it's been painful, all of a sudden, like that trust starts to develop.
Yeah, you get that authenticity, and now I can believe you to Sherpa me or guide me through that. So I love it. Well, gentlemen, I can't thank you enough. It looks like Jordana jumped off there too, but this was really, really helpful. So this has been the hyper growth banter session on outbound messaging. So awesome stuff here. Patrick Downs, Francois Bordeaux, thanks so very much. I really appreciate it. So we'll sum this up and I'll kick it over to you and let's get after it. Thanks, everyone.